Wow. Talk about a black swan event. This is the true definition of a black swan event in its purest form, because nobody anticipated this. Don't lie to me and try to tell me that you had exploding electronic devices on your apocalypse bingo card for 2024. Nobody did. Many of us had cyber attack. But even myself, who's looked at this issue extensively, I've had cybersecurity experts on the channel before. While it may have come up that you could definitely induce some sort of kinetic reactions in electronics or critical infrastructure, none of them predicted that something like this would ever happen. That you could actually manipulate a battery management system and induce a certain current that would trigger a thermal runaway effect, which would possibly trigger an explosive inside, embedded within an electronic device, and do it simultaneously in thousands of different devices as a preempt to war. Nobody expected this. Holy shit, we are living in scary, scary times. When you know that increasingly more so, lithium batteries are in everything. And everything is networked. Everything is connected to the internet in some way, shape, or form. And these are all attack vectors. When you understand this, and what you're seeing behind me here is a guy who is inducing a overclocking in a computer by ramping up the voltage somehow remotely. I'm not sure if this is something that could be replicated by malware, but the cybersecurity experts I've spoken to said, yeah, this is easy. They can do it no problem if they have access to the OS, to the system. They can do this. So you're talking about the potential then to have a maximum overdrive situation. I don't even think Hollywood has made it this far yet. This guy is making a phone explode. What you're seeing here is a phone explosion, okay? That's just a phone. That's the battery from a phone exploding. Now, if you're wondering what the hell I'm rambling on about, today in Lebanon, Israel committed what some are calling one of the biggest terrorist attacks in history. To be brutally honest, that's what Edward Snowden is calling it. Right now, you have 400 to 500 members that they're claiming of Hezbollah. We're just going to say 400 to 500 people who are currently in critical condition and around 5,000 who've been injured. But those numbers could be much, much higher when the final tally eventually comes out. Now, what happened was 3 months ago, Hezbollah, ironically, warned all of their fighters. If you remember Nasrallah's address, he's the leader of Hezbollah. He came out and said, we need to get rid of our smartphones because they are using these. They're compromised. They're using these to spy. They're using these to triangulate our locations. They're hacking into them. And it's causing us to lose a lot of battles. It's having deleterious effects on our military. And as such, they switched over to these pagers, these simpler pagers, which they presumed were harder to hack. Well, there's a discourse raging online right now. And then, of course, what happened is they all simultaneously today detonated, exploded. And what happened was, the reason why there's so many serious injuries is because, I guess, prior to the explosion, the pager went off. So most people, when their pager goes off, I haven't used a pager in decades. I didn't think they were still a thing. Apparently, it's we were led to believe, I guess, up until this point, that they were a more resilient and resistant technology that couldn't be hacked in the battlefield. But I guess now no electronics are going to be trusted as communication devices in this way. But what happened was people would look at the pager to see what number was calling. Apparently, the number that was calling was supposedly from the one of the higher-ups, so it was important. Or it was made to, it was like spoofed, or what do they call it, using a proxy or something to make it look like that was the person who was calling, and then it exploded. So a lot of injuries to people's hands, and of course, a lot of issues with blindness because it exploded in their face and acted as whatever components were in the pager acted like as shrapnel, and so it went into people's eyes. So even the Iranian ambassador apparently is stricken with this blindness issue as a result of him having one of these pagers, or somebody near him having one of these pagers. Maybe he was, somebody said, hey, the supreme leader is calling me and take a look, and it exploded in his face. Who knows? But this is serious. You're going to see a massive response from Hezbollah, because if they don't, they've essentially conceded defeat. This is the ultimate declaration of war. Think of how far up the escalation ladder we've moved on the northern front. And it's been so incremental and gradual, almost very sophisticatedly orchestrated in order for people to not even really notice how serious it's become. Because there was a time when just a simple cross-border exchange between Hezbollah and Israel was newsworthy. Long gone are those days. We're talking about day after day, heavy bombardment on both sides, rocket attacks by Hezbollah, and heavy bombardment by Israel. You have high-level assassinations, and then it got stepped up continuously. You had that big attack on the Golan Heights. Still, you know, some people debate who was at fault for that, whether it was an Iron Dome intercept or whatever. You have this progressive ramping up now to the point where you have arguably one of the biggest, what some people are calling a terrorist attack, Edward Snowden calling it a terrorist attack. And by most definitions, you'd have to agree, because of course, this was a very indiscriminate attack. These bombs went off in marketplaces, in doctors' offices, pretty much everywhere, presuming that it was all Hezbollah operators who are in possession of these, and not children, not anybody else, not somebody who was just affiliated with the Hezbollah group and may have not have been a combatant. And then, of course, that gets into a very gray area in terms of who is a combatant and who isn't. And of course, that works both ways. So if somebody supports the IDF in the minds of Hezbollah, but they're not a fighter on the front lines, are they fair game to be targeted? And so this is one of the most ingenious and diabolical, at the same time, sabotage operations in all of history. Now, the disagreement online comes in terms of how it was done. Was this done by Israel sabotaging the supply lines and embedding a very explosive powder? I don't have the exact name. I could show you the science of all this, but I'll spare you that and just give you the short and skinny of it. There's two conflicting camps here. One is saying that this was explosives that were embedded at somewhere along the supply chain. 5,000 of these pagers had trace amounts of explosive powder embedded within them, and the thermal runaway effect that was induced by some sort of malware or some ISR plane that was circulating at the time, or some frequency that was broadcast near the southern part of Lebanon, was what triggered the explosive. Okay, that is one hypothesis. The other hypothesis is that it was a thermal runaway effect of a lithium battery. What you are seeing here behind me is that thermal runaway effect. So this guy is using a voltage to induce, overclock the CPU, and to try to get the battery hot enough to manipulate the battery management system so it goes into what's called a thermal runaway effect, where it overheats. Now, if you've seen this happen, I've seen this happen. I've had many devices, in fact, have this happen to them. Usually it happens slow, and you can watch it, and your battery will start to bloat, and then suddenly it will just start to explode all of a sudden, and will light on fire. It's not really an explosion typically, because it happens very slow. But there are claims that you can actually make this happen much more rapidly, and it has an explosive effect. The question is the explosive effect that we're seeing here, is this enough to cause some of the damage that we are seeing and some of the casualties and the horrific scenes that we are seeing right now in Lebanon. It's still a subject of debate. However, the people who are pushing the narrative that this was done by Mossad operatives in a very James Bond fashion, and of course Netanyahu's playing into this with all kinds of meme videos of him taking credit for this but not taking credit for this. It's the New York Times citing unnamed anonymous U.S. officials, as is always the case. And it's always the New York Times that gets the last word, doesn't it, when it comes to what the final conclusive say is and what the de facto narrative is going to be. Yet these three unnamed officials, we don't know where they came from a hole in the ground. We don't know where they got their information, because according to Matthew Miller, the spokesperson for the White House, he claims that the White House had no knowledge of this and they don't have any information that is outside the scope of what the Israelis know. The Israelis haven't even claimed responsibility for this. So how is it that these three anonymous officials have given conclusive evidence that the Mossad embedded in this top secret operation, we must presume very clandestine stuff, that these, how did these three unnamed officials get this information to the New York Times? Okay, so some people are suggesting that perhaps this is an attempt to take away and minimize panic, alleviate panic ado with the potential for all of our electronic devices that contain lithium batteries to be ticking time bombs that can be hacked. Could you imagine a widespread attack hacking electronic vehicles? When I made my first video this morning about this particular topic, everybody was joking in the comment section about maybe my EV is going to be next, because I have one of my vehicles is a Tesla, not my bug out vehicle, but one of the vehicles I have is a Tesla, and that has a massive battery on it. Could you imagine if this same thermal runaway effect, if there was some sort of backdoor malware installed, if somebody was able to hack Teslas, and as a preempt to a major war, they unloaded and they burned one of their biggest zero-day exploits and caused a thermal runaway effect in the battery management system of the Teslas. I'm sure there's lots of safety protocols that minimize the risk of this. And I know it, a lot of it depends on how the batteries are manufactured. They have various venting ways that they can vent the batteries to slow down this process to prevent it from exploding, which doesn't necessarily prevent it from lighting on fire. But we really have to ask ourselves, we've exchanged convenience in many ways for security. Because all of these lithium-powered devices and everything is moving towards lithium. And boy, is it convenient. You get that instant torque, okay? You get that renewability by being able to charge it from the sun. But all of these devices are networked. And there is a potential there, of course, for them to be attack vectors. Every single thing that is connected to the internet could potentially, if it has Bluetooth, imagine that happened to your headphones. Okay, imagine just one day there was iPods were hacked, or earpods, whatever they're called, were hacked, and they just blew up in people's ears. I mean, this is something that could potentially happen. Now, there's all kinds of different research papers, and I'm sure more is going to come out, and there's going to be all kinds of exposition around this. Every time, you know, there's a natural disaster, the public gets educated about what is and what isn't possible with these things. This is the pager in question here, manufactured in Taiwan, so somewhere in the supply chain. And we all know that the United States has a very big presence in Taiwan, and it's not unthinkable to believe that if the United States does, one of their primary allies that gets anything they want, including the best weapon systems that the United States has, and gets asked no questions about its nuclear weapons, would have access to that supply chain, or that, how would it get there? I guess it would, you'd think they would not ship it over. You think they would ship it in a way that was more secure than just like by a shipping container or something like that. But what this also could say is that there is a lot of infiltration into Hezbollah's ranks. And I think that's what this is demonstrating. This is going to be a massive setback for them. This paper here This is from, what is this, December 15th, 2024. This is a legit, I don't know, I guess this, they must release they must release them earlier than, it's kind of like cars, how, you know, the 2025 cars. Elsevier is a, one of the top of the hop, reputable science paper journals. So this is the real deal. So disregard the date, that the date's in the future. It's just like how they date cars, you know, and they're in the future. Experimental investigation of explosive hazard from lithium-ion battery thermal runaway effluent gas. Basically, they demonstrate in this study that you indeed can induce a massive explosion because there's a gas that builds up within the battery, okay? So it's not just that the battery itself is overheating. There's a gas. And then as there's an ignition, then it goes boom, okay? So I don't know the science of it. I'm sure more is going to be coming out, and it's going to be explained away that us laymen can understand it at a later time. But that's what's going on there. This is another piece to the puzzle. Hezbollah suspicions, and this is from a reputable agency, Al Monitor. They claim that the Harvard University, the White House, European Union, the United Nations, NATO, etc., they all have the stamp of approval. So they are claiming that Hezbollah has suspicions that Israel was going to do this attack, and that two of the people who had these suspicions, one of them was assassinated by the Mossad. This is what they claim in this article, that of course is behind a paywall. I mean, when are these news agencies going to learn? Paywalls are a great way to go bankrupt. Do not do the payroll thing. Do ads, do something else. Ain't nobody going to pay for one news service. Nobody wants to get their news from just one news service. People want to have a diverse plethora of opinion nowadays, so why would you just go to one news agency and give them all your money? It's just not going to work. Anyways, Hezbollah has suspected that this was going to happen. A couple guys, and one of the people who found out about it was almost able to notify one of the higher ranking commanders and get everybody to get rid of these pagers. So to preempt that plan, Israel detonated the devices prematurely. The thinking was that they wanted to do this in order to soften the ground for a ground invasion, that they were going to do this at the same time that they were going to stage their ground attack. But they had to do it before they wanted to. They wanted, so that this plan was essentially forestalled by this one individual who was about to notify Nasrallah, I presume. So they decided to detonate it then and there. And of course, the Iranian ambassador has had his vision compromised as a result of presumably looking at the pager. I'm not sure if I already stated this, but the reason why people are having so many eye issues is because they look at the pager when you get the text from the Supreme Leader or whoever they thought that they were receiving a text from, and that led to a lot of casualties that had the effect of blinding a lot of people, 500 to be exact, but the amounts are still coming in. So again, this is the New York Times narrative. Israel planted explosives in pagers sold to Hezbollah. Officials say, so long as you are considered a mainstream media, all you got to do is say officials say, and everybody tweets this. Now, I'm not saying that New York Times isn't a reputable agency and they haven't developed that cred over decades, but you got to be a bit more specific in terms of stating your sources and how your sources were able to get this information when even the U.S. government and the Israeli government aren't claiming responsibility or foreknowledge of this. This is very significant. But what I'm concerned about most is that now that we know that there's proof of concept, the technology exists, and this will likely be replicated in the future in somehow. We have to ask ourselves, especially considering a lot of our electronics are made in China, if there isn't some kind of kill switch on everything. Never mind the explosive aspect, just the kill switch aspect. It would not take much, knowing what we now know about how you can induce a current in these in these devices with some sort of malware, trigger the thermal runaway effect, and just cook the system. I mean, how many devices could we find this in? You probably don't even need the lithium battery. You probably could just, you know, have the power management system do something weird and fry the system in that way. So this is a whole new dimension of warfare, of cyber warfare, electronic warfare, that I don't even think most people are ready to comprehend yet, because so much of our life is dependent on the digital world of things. I would encourage you to check out our videos that we've done on cyber attack in the past. And honestly, I cannot believe this is the most black swan of black swan event. I never could have predicted. You know, when I said a couple days ago that we're going to see a week's worth of news every day in the run-up to election, I never predicted something like this. Absolutely unheard of. Lukashenko is claiming today that the West is getting ready to do a provocation on his borders, and that this provocation will start World War III. He says this: an attack on Belarus is the beginning of a third world war. Therefore, in no case, neither Ukrainians nor Russians, they understand this perfectly, nor Americans who want to sit behind the ocean, this cannot be done. He also stated in other aspects of this speech that he thought that NATO was getting ready to conduct a operation on their borders, which would bring them into the conflict. So we're seeing escalation everywhere, on every front. The plan to allow Ukraine to fire missiles inside Russia is still in the cards. It has not changed. The decision has already been made. It's simply a matter of how they're going to roll that out to the public at this point in time. So we will see missiles, cruise missiles, landing inside Russia in the not-so-distant future. The announcement will be made upon their first arrival. And this is because, despite a lot of bluster and tough talk, Vladimir Putin continues to be relatively ambiguous in delineating his red lines, saying things like, well, we will take the appropriate response. All NATO hears is he's not going to use nukes yet, so they're going to continue to push. This is probably why there are concerns right now that Russia is getting ready to do a nuclear weapons test. This is being reported by numerous mainstream media outlets that not only is Russia considering or priming the ground for a nuclear test, but also that there was traces of radioactive cesium-137 measured along Norway's border with Russia. The radioactivity was measured in filters at a name of a city I cannot pronounce, and I'm not going to try to, in the second week of September, but the origin is still unknown. Now, we're going to talk about the Russian nuclear testing site, Novaya Zemlya, but they're saying that this could also be being caused by forest fires that are currently raging in Portugal and other places throughout Europe. When Chernobyl happened, it kicked up a lot of radioactive isotopes into the air, and I guess a lot of it gets trapped in the forest throughout Europe. And so when these forests burn, it causes a small but noticeable spike in radiation. I should add that this is not a dangerous level of radiation, they're saying. But according to officials, Russian weapons designers from Rosatom have all summer and early autumn been working at the Pankovo test site at Novaya Zemlya. This is where they used to do most of their nuclear weapons testing. The site is dedicated to test the Burevestnik nuclear-powered cruise missile, believed to have more or less an open cooling of the mini reactor. So this is their nuclear-powered nuclear missile that can circumnavigate the planet a couple times or something like that, or stay in the air for extended periods of times. You know you're in a state of DEFCON 2 or 1 when that thing is flying around. Work at the test site, however, is strictly secret and very little information is made public. There are no official reports that the Burevestnik is tested, but indications can be seen by studying daily updated satellite images from the Arctic archipelago, which I'm not going to show you here. The Barents Observer, but I've seen them, and yeah, they're legit. There's definitely activity going on. In fact, I think I've shown them in a previous video. The Barents Observer has, in the course of summer, seen several cargo ships and special purpose vessels in the waters outside Pankovo over the last few weeks. So the question is, the Rosatom, the guy who oversees it, has basically stated, yeah, we're ready to do a nuclear weapons test whenever Putin gives us the green light. So is that going to be the first thing the Russians do? Critics of that approach claim that if you do a nuclear weapons test instead of actually using a nuclear weapon, it is not going to be enough. It's going to be like if you were to use a low-grade antibiotic on a very dangerous bacterial infection. It's just going to make it worse because it's going to be resistant to that. And then you're going to have to use an even, you know, more powerful antibiotic. In this case, this just means that you're going to increase the risk of an escalation that could eventually trigger a full-blown nuclear war. Whereas, contrary to a lot of the threats made by NATO, if you use a nuclear weapon now in some limited capacity on the battlefield just to show you mean business, then maybe they'll actually back off. But if you do nuclear testing, they're likely to continue to push the envelope. So this is what Reuters is reporting right now. Russian nuclear test chief says Moscow is ready to resume nuclear testing at any moment. Now, this is being pumped by the West. I can tell you that he said this months ago. In fact, I reported on this months ago. He's been saying this for a while. So this is not really new. What's new is the West's coverage of it, which is kind of concerning at this point in time. But there's many ways to interpret what that's all about. What else do we got to talk about today? I think that this escalation with Iran, if the assassination of Haniyeh did not trigger a response yet. Remember, Iran said they're going to respond to this on their own terms, and they're not going to be provoked into any sort of premature response that is going to just be leveraged by the collective West to start a war with Iran. And right now, they're looking for any possible excuse to do that very thing. You can bet that there will be a response to the ambassador potentially losing his eyesight and several other Iranian officials as casualties of this unprecedented Black Swan event. There's no doubt going to be a response from Iran. The question is just when and where. Sergei Shoigu, the former Russian defense minister, still high up there in Russia's Security Council, was in Iran today while all this happened, meeting with his counterpart in Iran. So it's starting to look more and more likely that there is high-level negotiations of the nuclear sort between the Iranians and the Russians as World War III continues to ramp up around the world. Jan Stoltenberg, the NATO Secretary General, told The Times that allowing Kiev to launch long-range missile strikes deep into Russia would not be a red line leading to escalation. Okay, this is the Secretary General, Jan Stoltenberg. I know some people think he's a know-nothing clown who doesn't really have any say in what eventually happens, but he's saying what NATO already has said. The United States has not said no, and that's all you need to know. And if they haven't said no, that means they're about to say yes. That has been the case ever since they started rolling out the first more advanced weapon systems to Ukraine. He, Jan Stoltenberg, rejected Vladimir Putin's warning that the use of a missile would be a red line after which Russia would be at war with NATO. So they don't believe that. Okay, so Russia continuously has to show them that no, we will be at war with you. Much like Hezbollah, it's basically make or break at this point in time. They have to do something or else they are just allowing themselves to be taken over by the Israelis. And quite honestly, from a strategic point of view, they probably should have did something a long time ago while they were preoccupied in the Gaza Strip. But of course they didn't. So now Israel has had a chance to consolidate its forces, and they've basically stabilized things in Gaza for the most part. There's still fighting going on. Obviously, they haven't collected all the hostages or killed all the hostages yet. So they're, you know, Israel is in a better place to fight a war on the Northern Front right now than at any other time. And plus, a lot of their soldiers now have experience. So that's going to go a long way in fighting that conflict, which is not to say that it's going to be a conflict they can win, per se, because we've still yet to see this massive arsenal that we know that Hezbollah has, but we've yet to see it in action yet. And the question is, why haven't we seen it yet? Is there so much division in the ranks amongst Hezbollah, more so than is being led on, that is preventing this from happening, that is compromising them from the inside out? He, Putin, has already announced red lines many times, and he's not escalated, which means directly involving NATO allies into the conflict is likely a non sequitur. So that's what's going on there. Now, yesterday, I had terrible, terrible audio presentation as a result of a technical malfunction that I was experiencing with my microphone. I went over numerous topics that I don't think I did justice because, of course, the microphone kept breaking up and it was brutal having to listen to that again. For any of you who endured it, I appreciate it. There was a few stretches there where it was like 10 or 15 minutes without any crackling, but during the times that it was almost unbearable. So yesterday I talked, of course, about Russia boosting its military, the disproportionality between their military and NATO's military. I talked about Meta banning Russian state media, as well as Sputnik and RIA Novosti and the Iron Curtain separating the narratives, and that they're doing this in the run-up to World War III. I spoke about, what else did I speak about? What is this here? I talked about the misconceptions of mutually assured destruction and the myths that are being perpetuated. Specifically, I talked about how this fatalism with respect to making people believe that you can't prepare for nuclear war is actually doing people a disservice, because there's two conflicting perspectives. One that says, nukes, they're not a big deal. I use them in Call of Duty all the time, and I just respawn somewhere. There's no radioactive effects or whatever. And so a lot of the population in these generations nowadays who haven't been exposed to the Cold War hysteria, they don't remember the true threat of nuclear weapons. So that's one side of the spectrum. On the other side of the distribution, you have people now who are being reawoken to the threats of nuclear war, but in such an alarmist fashion that they think the world is going to end and that there is no nuance. Once you use one nuke, as he says here, once a single nuke is launched, it's a death sentence for the human race, which is patently false. Okay, and the Russians know it and the Chinese know it. In fact, they encouraged this perspective at the peak of the Cold War, because they wanted people to, they wanted to do, to induce apathy in the population. They didn't want people to prepare. They wanted to demoralize people when it came to emergency preparedness surrounding nuclear conflict. The truth of the matter is, there's a spectrum of possible outcomes when it comes to how a nuclear war will start and how it will finish. Not all nuclear wars are going to end in mutually assured destruction and nuclear winter. But for some reason, it's catchy and it's easy to sell books. So a lot of people are perpetuating this myth. There is a myth that there is just but one outcome. As we've seen in the last 2.5 years, there's plenty of nuance, and the climb up the escalation ladder is far more dynamic than we envisioned in the past. This is what we're seeing. 2.5 years ago, if you would have told me that the Ukrainians were firing missiles into Crimea, most people, in fact, the Russians themselves, many high-ranking Russian officials said that if you do that, if you cross that red line, it's going to be nuclear. Well, they crossed that red line and about 100 others, and we're still here. This means that the run up the escalation ladder is not going to be so cut and dry as people think. And even if it is, a lot of these warheads are not operational. So there might be 1,200 operational warheads on either side. In a first strike, maybe you're able to successfully neutralize half of those warheads. 600 nukes detonated even simultaneously is not going to end the world. It's going to have some very negative effects on the populations, possibly for generations to come, but it's not going to be a world-ending event. It's going to be the end of the world as we know it. It's going to be lights out. It's going to be blackout. Destroyed transformers, electromagnetic pulse, killing all the electronics, and we're likely going to go back to the 1800s. True, in some respects, but not everywhere. There's going to be fiefdoms of cyberpunk dystopias. It's not going to be like people think, okay? So that's all I was trying to say yesterday. I'm not sure what motivated me to want to go on that soliloquy about that particular issue, but I did. I talked a bit about the Trump assassin's affiliations with his hardline pro-Ukrainian view and his anticipation of World War III. Not necessarily a great look. Of course, we've had the hypersonic missile that hit Israel that I spoke about briefly, and it's contested whether or not it is truly hypersonic in a maneuverable cruise missile sense. This was a ballistic missile, but perhaps the Houthis are saying that it was able to evade significant amounts of Israeli multi-layered defense by having a late-stage maneuverability aspect to it or something like that. Ukraine planning false flag attack, according to Russian intelligence. I talked about the Russians and the Iranians who are having nuclear talks. I talked about this ridiculous thing that I won't even talk about anymore. It's the horses, the people, you know, pretending that they're riding fake horses and how ridiculous that was. I talked about ChatGPT now exceeding the average IQ. The most recent version has a human IQ of 120. So that is the height of these large language models at this point in time, 120 IQ in just like, what, a few years. So just imagine a few years from now. I talked about the Saudis buying gold. I went on a rant about society this, society that, and that's about where I'm going to leave it today, my friends. Let's see what happens, but just buckle up because all kinds of untold craziness is going to happen between now and the election, and probably even more between the election and inauguration day. So prepare now while you still can, because at any moment in time, I mean, I'm just amazed. I mean, if anything, you know, one could make the argument that the resilience of the system has demonstrated its strength in the last year. With everything that has happened, you would think that there would have been something that would have fundamentally broken the system. But yet we persist. And this is not to say that that's going to continue into the future. But here's hoping, but you got to pair that hope with preparedness. Go gear up, CanadianPreparedness.com. All the gear that you need to ride out what may come. Thanks for watching, my friends. Take care. Canadian Prepper out.